you just face your fear. You expose yourself to what you're afraid of. If it's heights, then go and jump from the airplane with instructor on your back, of course, so that you are safe. If it's public speaking, then go and speak.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Natasha Bazilevich. There's three facts that I think you should know about Natasha. One, she's been teaching presentation skills for almost 15 years. Two, she has clients in more than 20 countries. And three, she's run 7 marathons and 11 half marathons. That's a lot of running. Natasha, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. It's really great to be here.
And I'm a marathon runner too, but I don't do that anymore, but haven't run that many. Now, here's the question. What keeps you going? What keeps you running?
What keeps me running? The feeling that I get after it. You know, some people, they really love the process of running. Like one of my best friends, she loves running and she runs for running. I run after that feeling of exhilaration and euphoria that I get afterwards, and especially with marathons, when you cross that finish line and you get this feeling of euphoria, like nothing else. Ooh, it's just an orgasmic feeling when you feel like you are at the top of the world. You finished 26 miles or 42 kilometers. So that's a great one. And that's why I keep running.
Well, good for you. Yes. And I know the feeling. And at that point, you don't even care about the time. It's just, I did it. I did it again.
Yes, I did it. And it's like all these arms in the air and so many emotions and hugs and the medal that you get at the end. But yes, the feeling is amazing. And that's why I love it so much. It is addictive. It's a little bit addictive because of that feeling. We keep chasing those endorphins, all those, and dopamine too, all these hormones.
Now it's curious. We talk about the endorphins, the dopamine and all that rush. When it comes to public speaking, when it comes to presenting, when you present, what emotions do you experience?
When I present, experience a little bit of nervousness at the beginning, which I love. And that's another rush. And then I turn those emotions, that nervousness, into energy and excitement. So for me, when I speak, it's a very similar experience when I love it. That's why I actually love it. When I use this excitement and this adrenaline, because it's normal to be nervous, to be a little bit afraid, we would say, but I even say that that's just nervousness, not necessarily fear. And when you have this little bit of these kind of emotions at the beginning, then you can understand, okay, hey, this is not really nervousness necessarily, it's excitement. And then you can turn it into passion and deliver a great message, because that's what helps me make other people also passionate about my topic, is because I use this nervous energy, turn it into excitement, and then show it through passion so that people love the message and enjoy it as much as I do. So it is very similar to when we just start. So this is not even about finishing a marathon. It's more like starting a marathon or starting some kind of event like this, when so much excitement in the air and also nervousness because you're studying. You don't know what time will you run with. Will you be able to finish? It's still unknown. And so it's this whole adrenaline energy that you use to keep going. And then, of course, when you finish, it's the feeling of victory.
Finish with victory. Yes, a great feeling to have. Natasha, you've been working with clients around the world to help them improve their presentation skills. When they come to you with their fears, their anxiety about
public speaking, some of them, you know, maybe deathly afraid, and some of them are simply awkward or nervous. Where do you start with them? Is there a question? Is there a seance to calm them? What do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yes, like you said, there are different people. Some of them just have a little bit of nervousness, but some of them really have anxiety and fear. And it's a real thing. We know. I don't believe that statistics, but some people say it's the second biggest fear after death, which nobody really knows exactly. But we just know that it's really common. And I've had different people. I can tell you stories about two specific ones. One girl, she said that whenever she needs to speak online or in public, she would have tachycardia. So she had to take pills. It was really dangerous for her health. So she once told me, should I just quit? Should I just give up? Because maybe it's not for me. And you know, the question that I asked her, well, why do you need it? Why did you come to me and you decided that you wanted public speaking? Because I want to start a Spanish club. She wanted to have this Spanish speaking club and create her business and grow it. So she needed to speak about it online. I said, okay. Is it really important for you? Is it your dream? What if you don't do it? She said, yes, no, that's a dream. That's really important for me. Okay, well, if this is the dream, if you really think that you want it in your life, then let's go after it. So you have to show people the importance of their goal. And do they really want to work on public speaking? And you know, when I think about it, we all need public speaking, especially entrepreneurs, professionals in the business world, executives, we need to speak. Even if it's just to 2-3 people, or if it's online, then we have to have some kind of public speaking skills. And it is developable. You can develop them and you can know how to deal with your fear or with your nervousness. And so this girl who started working on her speaking skills and dealing with her anxiety, with her tachycardia, right now, she is my little star on Instagram. She goes live almost every day there, and she created her channel. She created her business, and her students come to her and she teaches them Spanish because she started exposing herself, this exposure therapy that helps with the fear of public speaking. And that's what we were doing with her. Little by little, she started speaking online, speaking to smaller groups, then to bigger groups, and then it became more comfortable for her. So that's one story. Do you want me to tell the other one?
Well, before you do, mm-hmm. you mentioned an interesting term, exposure therapy. What's that all about?
This is when we expose ourselves to any kind of fear. So psychiatrists deal or heal, treat different fears with exposure therapy. When you know this phrase, face your fear. So basically that's what you do. You just face your fear. You expose yourself to what you're afraid of. If it's heights, then go and jump from the airplane with instructor on your back, of course, so that you are safe. If it's public speaking, then go and speak. But it's really important to speak to smaller groups of people. And since we're on this topic, let me share one very practical and easy tip for people who have a little bit of fear of public speaking and you want to expose yourself. Go to Facebook, if you have Facebook, create an empty group. And it's really easy. You just click on create group and it's empty. It's just you there. And start going live in that group, because you have to get comfortable with pushing or tapping that button that says live. Because there's something in our brain that has this fear of, oh, I'm going to be live. What if I can't edit it? What if somebody, well, it's just you, but still you will start with this, because exposure therapy works gradually. You have to expose yourself little by little. First is just you, then go to small groups and speak to 2 people. It doesn't have to be online. It can be in person. Whenever you are with friends, there are like 3 people standing and maybe you are shy and you never shared your opinion because you think, oh, it's foolish. They will think it's dumb. I'm not going to say it. Say it. That is the sign for you. That is the alarm going in your brain that says, go and say it anyway. So you just share your opinion when you're with 2-3 friends, then go and speak, raise your hand and speak when there are 15 at a meeting, but always intentionally find ways and opportunities for you to speak. That's how you will expose yourself.
So we expose ourselves to a little bit of fear at a time. And so if you're afraid of dogs, then go maybe go visit the kennel and just and peek in the door. The first day, you just peek in the door and look at the dogs. You don't have to go in. The next day, maybe you step inside the door. And the next day, you might walk down the aisle and look at the dogs. And then eventually, you might actually go up to the bars and say, nice doggy, nice doggy.
Yes. Yes. And then finally, you pet the dog. And then, yes, yes, exactly.
You mentioned another case you were going to tell us about. Please tell us.
Yes. So this particular client, she also had a fear of public speaking. And what's interesting, we could dig out the moment that created this fear for her. So it wasn't just all the time, all her life. It wasn't tachycardia or anything connected with her health, but it was in her mind. It wasn't even physical necessarily, but in her mind, she kept remembering one moment that was a failure for her. She gave a presentation and people in the audience mocked her. So she felt like a loser, like a failure. Plus, some of those people were really respected by her. So that created this negative memory in her mind that kept being a block for her to go and present again. And so anytime she needed to present afterwards, she just had public speaking fear. She had all that anxiety because of this block, because of that memory. So what we needed to do is to go back, use visualization, and remember the moments when she was very successful in her presentations before that and even after, and anchor the feeling of that success and just remember how good she was. Then plus also we needed to go back into the moment of when she was not successful and when she failed, and we had to reframe that experience of hers so that she could see the positive of that negative experience, so that she could see that it doesn't really matter to her what those people are thinking. And then it was easier for her to look at it differently, because this is actually a very deep work when you go into your mindset and you have to reframe, recreate, delete those old beliefs and start seeing it differently, because that is what's blocking. So the first thing we did with this client was to go into the memory and retrieve the moments of success, retrieve the moments of failure, and start reframing them emotionally.
And what I'm hearing there, Natasha, is when we retrieve that moment of failure, mm-hmm. For example, we can reframe it. We can say, yeah, I wasn't as good as I intended to be, but I wasn't as bad as they said I was. I could have been a lot worse. And mm-hmm. and so that's a beginning. And I suppose we can also look back that and say, well, you know what? That was just practice. I can get better. So we need to say that, hey, it didn't go well, mm-hmm. but it doesn't make me a failure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also you can find something positive in that moment, because there could be, like I said, there could be a teaching moment. It could be just a training moment. And plus you can look at those people who were mocking maybe, and you can understand that that didn't matter to you that much. So what they were mocking? Well, laugh with them. So just change the attitude to the situation if you cannot change the situation. We know this philosophy or this kind of thinking. And it's very well, maybe if you're familiar with positive intelligence, I think Sharzad is the author of the book. And he talks a lot about saboteurs and about sage. So it's in our mind, we have these saboteurs, these thoughts that sabotage us, our success. And also we have this sage in our mind. So judge and sage, and saboteurs are the helpers for judge. So sage is this wise person in us, in our mind, who can look at every situation and can change it, see it positively. And that is the best way of dealing with those saboteurs, because saboteurs are the ones who will say, you're not enough, you're not worthy, you can't do it, you can't go and speak in public, you are afraid. Remember that moment when you failed? Well, it's going to happen again. Those are saboteurs. And to stop them, we've got to activate our sage, this wise person that says, so what that it happened? It was actually really good, because it showed me my weaknesses. So now I know what to deal with. So now I know that there could be people in the audience who would mock me. This was really good practice. Now, next time there are people in the audience who mock me, I will reply, or I will respond in this way or in that way. So this is simulation for you. Just go back into that memory and think of it as some kind of a training simulation that you can use for next time and do it differently. So that is the best way of looking at it.
Natasha, there's a lot of people who say, I'm just not good at public speaking. It's not me. It's not me. I can't do that. Don't make me do that. What do you say to those people?
I say to those people, are you good at walking or reading? At what one time you were not good at walking, you were crawling. At one time you didn't know how to read, how to put two words together, how to write probably. But then you learned. Then you developed. You didn't just say, I'm not good at walking. Well, I fall down too many times. I fell 15 times today. Okay, I'm just not going to walk. Or your parents said, well, okay, walking is not for you. Let's just say you're just going to be crawling your whole life. No, the same with public speaking. People think that it's something you have to be born with, or you have to be special and have this special talent. It's a skill, just like walking, reading, writing, running, and whatever. You can develop it. Just like any other skill, some people could be better at that skill, some people could be worse, but still it's something that we all need in our life, just like reading, writing, and walking. You need to speak and you need to know how to communicate well, because you speak with your friends, you speak at meetings, you speak with people around you when you want them to hear you, and you have some kind of, not necessarily even a huge important message, but you want them to go to a movie that you want. You have a restaurant that's your favorite and you would like your friends to go with you. So do you know how to persuade them? Do you know how to communicate your thought? Or you have a very important opinion on the matter and you would like for people to hear you. How will you share that opinion? That's public speaking. Public speaking is not necessarily on stage to thousands of people. It can be to 2-3 of your friends. And you've got to develop this as a skill, and anybody can.
Natasha, what mistakes do you notice people making early when they're just starting to develop their public speaking skills? Are there some myths that they buy into and they believe that, you know, they've heard someone say, oh, you always have to do this, or I see everybody do this? What are some of those mistakes?
One biggest mistake that comes to mind right away is people try to be like someone else. They watch speakers. And a lot of times we see these energetic, very charismatic speakers. And someone who is quiet, introverted, is trying to be like that, like Tony Robbins, for example. But they are different. And I say, don't try to be like that one person or three of your favorite speakers. Find who you are. What is your energy? And that's what I teach. I teach specific speaking energy. I'm working on my book in this area because I believe that every one of us have this unique speaking energy. Mine is, yes, it's this crazy fire. But then there are other people who are like water, and they are flowing, and they are gentle, and their speech is like a song. It's different. So speak with that, because if you're trying to adopt someone else's, then it will be fake. And people will feel that something is wrong. There's some misalignment there. So learn their techniques. You can use their methodology, but still be you. So that is one. But then another mistake that people make is they get rid of their fear. So they start speaking and they think, oh yes, I'm speaking. Great. I'm in the spotlight. So they just start talking and they don't have any structure to their speech. They don't have one point. They lose their main idea. They keep going. They start rambling, and their audience also don't understand what they're talking about. So no structure, too long, not concise enough, and absence of one big point is also a huge mistake that I've noticed. As soon as people got to it, you know, like they tasted speaking a little bit, they just start talking and don't constrain themselves. So remember, structure is very important. And maybe the third one I would say is not using vocal variety enough. People start talking again, and a lot of times they forget that our voice is a tool. And you've got to play with your voice. You've got to use it all capacity. You have to project your voice. You have to use different volume, different pitches, because you know that there is a different meaning if we use high pitch or if we use the low pitch. Then also you can speak fast and show excitement, or you can speak really slowly, pause and show that there's something important. Play with it. Just play with your voice. And I notice this mistake when people are monotonous or kind of, maybe not 100%, but still they're not using enough of vocal variety. Then it's really hard to listen and concentrate on their message.
Natasha, were you a natural?
Natural?
A natural at public speaking?
No, I wouldn't say that I was natural. I developed it as a skill. When I was young, I was really shy. I was very shy. People didn't notice me. Teachers wouldn't pick me for performances. I actually was kind of like, I was shy, but at the same time, I was an action taker. So I was initiating. There were several times that I remember I came to my teachers and I said, can I go? We had this performance on the stage and one girl dropped out and they needed a replacement. So I remember I said, can I go? And this teacher, she looks at me up and down like this. And she's like, no, you go. And then she picks another girl. And this got into my brain so much. It's like, okay. And then there was one more moment. It was second grade, actually, when I came to teachers and said, I can sing this song. Then I started singing a song to them and they smiled to each other and said, no, that's okay. You don't have to. It's like, I tried, but I was not a person that was natural that people would just pick and teachers would think that I'm so great. No, but then eventually I worked on this. My best friend, and that was my teenage years. She said, when will you stop being so shy? After a couple of times when I just wouldn't do what we wanted to do together. And I thought, well, yeah, when? Enough is enough. I should develop my confidence. And I still have that entry in my diary when I wrote, I want to be confident because I wanted to be a journalist and an interpreter and travel the world. And so I wrote, okay, I want to develop confidence. I will do 1, 2, 3. And I was writing points because I read so many different books. I was always this bookworm. I loved different magazines and different educational pieces where I would learn how to develop my own personality. Even being a teenager, I was into personal development. So I found ways of how to grow confidence. And my first public speaking experience was my valedictorian speech when I shared on the stage. So from there, I went on and I started teaching, training, and speaking. But before that, no, I was not natural.
Natasha, I noticed both, but from watching you and listening to you, the energy exudes out of you. And I'm wondering, did you at some point in your development of your public speaking skills, did you change from this shy, quiet, very stiff person, and then once you let the energy came out, you felt more comfortable?
Yes. Well, I can't remember the moment because I think it was gradual and it was work over years. Because like I said, I started when I was a teenager, when I started working on it, I was reading about posture. So what helped is body language, because I still remember those articles in magazines where they said, here's the posture of people with different personalities, with how they sleep. Here's the sleep pose. And the confident person was sleeping on their back. And I remember I started training myself to sleep on my back. And I was a kid back then. And now this is my favorite pose for sleeping. And then I also watched Amy Cuddy talk about it in her speeches, in her TED Talk, how actually our body language rewires our brain. And when we sleep in an expansive pose, then we can actually even change our personality or our character, or at least influence it. And standing with 2 feet on the ground, with arms down. So this posture is a posture that shows confidence. And it's not just that we as confident people stand like this, but if we stand like this, we could become confident people. And there's research. You can, if people you're listening, Amy Cuddy, you can find her TED Talk. You can find her on YouTube. There's a 1.5 hour speech that she gave at the Institute of Social Studies somewhere, I can't remember exactly, but that's a really great video. Just watch the whole thing and you can learn so much about her research and about body language. It's powerful how we can change our mood, change our character, our personality, our state with just a different body posture. So that helped me after years, reading, learning, watching people. And this energy, I can't say that I created it in myself. I think partially it was always in me, even though I was shy, but I was always extroverted. And this is my energy. But like I said, you don't have to have this energy. If someone is quiet and they speak differently, and this is the way they talk, and this is the way they deliver their message, then that's different, and use that energy and use it the whole in all its capacity. And that will be beautiful. For me, this is my energy. This is who I am. I always was. It's just that I developed it more. When you right now want to understand what is your energy, then you have to watch yourself. You have to be self-aware, understand what is natural for you, and develop that personality of who you are into a more distinct and more clear way of speaking and using your energy.
Natasha, if people would like to learn more about your programs, they can find, you've got a free course online at your website.
Yes.
And we'll put, and that link is in the description below. You can click on there to get to the website. And the only reason I'm not spelling it out, because it's a long name.
Yes.
Natasha, before we wrap up, if you could sit down with a person in the workplace, a team leader, and they run meetings and they need to speak to their team fairly regularly, if you could give them one, two, or three ideas on how they can both look and feel more confident when they present their ideas to the team, especially when the team is uncertain about the times.
Mm-hmm. Well, the most important thing is for people to believe in what they're saying. Whenever I teach persuasion, then first, what you've got to do is you have to believe it, because then people will believe you. If you don't, let's say you need to develop or to deliver and develop and deliver a training, a presentation at your workplace, and it was someone else's idea and it's not yours, and you don't, well, sit down and learn about it, and then first convince yourself. Then you will be able to convince others. So believe in it. Then when you go and you start delivering, of course, body posture is important. So the way you stand, don't close yourself, be open to people. Make sure that you don't cover yourself with tables or with lecterns or with pulpits or paper or whatever. Don't hold, your body needs to be open to people, and you have to show that you are with them. That will show confidence, and plus it will show connection, because you've got to connect with them. Then also, as soon as you focus on them, on your people, and not on yourself, that also will create more confidence, because when people think too much about themselves, how they look, oh, what will people think about them? What if I make a mistake right now? Then you lose the audience, and you will make those mistakes, and you will not have enough confidence. As soon as you focus on your people, and you really in your mind, you have to think, okay, so here's the problem. These are uncertain times. I need to help them find solutions and be more confident in these times. And you have to care about this so much that you forget about yourself, forget about everything in your mind, in your head, your problems. Present, be present at the moment. Think about these people right now and how much you want to help them. And see, that's confidence, because you will be speaking with passion. You will be thinking about them. That will show them that you care. And you will be talking with confidence. Confidence will become like the added product, or like it will just be the result of your behavior and of your passion for this topic and for these people. So believe in your own message, focus on your people, use the right posture. And then when you deliver and you want to be persuasive, then use lower pitch of your voice. So these are some very practical tips. The lower pitch shows conviction. It shows confidence. If you want to connect with them, maybe at first you want to show some connection, use the higher pitch of your voice. But then when you want to give statements that you are confident in and you want to show confidence and you want to persuade them in, then you use your lower pitch voice for those specific statements. And then don't use phrases, "I think," "it seems to me," "probably," "in my opinion," who cares? When you're saying this, we understand it's your opinion. We understand that's what you think. Don't use those redundant phrases. Don't ask "right" at the end. Don't use a rising inflection at the end of a statement, because rising inflection, that's this, this kind of tone, tonality. We use it for questions. If you use it for statements, that shows that you are not confident, that you are not sure in yourself. If you want to be persuasive and you want to appear confident or show your confidence, use falling inflection. When your voice goes down and you are sure, "we need to do this. You need to go there. We need to do this." So see, right away, you can hear that there is a little bit of question at the end. It's like I'm asking for approval. That's not a statement. That's not confidence. So use falling inflection. And that will help people feel that you are confident. And also it will help you be more confident in yourself.
Natasha, a lot of valuable tips there. I remind our listeners to pause the recording and play that back again. Play that back a few times. You'll take away a lot of tips there. My guest today is Natasha Bazilevich, reminding you that even though you might experience some of that anxiety, that little bit of fear, that nervousness while you're speaking, face your fears and turn that into positive energy.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.